Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
All right, you guys. How's everybody feel? I feel like you're coming into a place out of the overflow of dwelling and family. Yeah. Does that feel different than a typical Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah? What feels different? Like, what word would you use? If you could give it a word.
It just feels more full.
Full. More build up. Yeah.
More connected.
More connected. Mm-hmm. I think that's really exciting. I think that's exciting to hear because it's also speaking to the movement that we've experienced as a family or the place that we've come to through preparation, right? That there have been many, many seasons where it's even a challenge or has been a challenge in us in our personal processes where we've had to grow even in our hunger for connection, our hunger for dwelling, pressing through insecurities in dwelling. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many things that we've walked through when it comes to dwelling in general. And then there's so many things we continue to walk through in our hunger for the word. Yeah. And so I think it's really powerful to see how they affect one another.
Yeah.
Right, that dwelling sends you further into your hunger for intimacy because it's your intimacy with Him because it's your covenant on earth,
yeah.
And then vice versa, right? The more you engage, the hungrier you are, or the more active you are in response to that hunger in your relationship with Him, the more you will hunger others on earth, right? That your heart for Him or your relationship with Him should send you further into intimacy with others. And either way, whatever end of the spectrum you've been on, whether it's I love to dwell, but I crash out when it comes to the Word, or I love the Word and I crash out when I have to be around people, or somewhere in between, right, that He is bringing a fullness to who we are because of how full He is,
right.
As one who calls us to a dwelling place, but it's calling us to a dwelling place out of absolute hunger to be close to Him. And part of how we're close is by coming under His word,
yeah.
Right? So tonight, I love that we get to come under His word while we've been in dwelling,
yeah.
And we can stay in that place and experience and receive the fullness of His intentions in a day.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see everyone back here. I was excited to see everyone at the parade. I was excited to see everyone at the house. Missed everyone who couldn't be at everything. But then I'm excited for everyone to be here tonight. So, okay. All right, as for tonight, our portion is specific to the instructions for the priesthood. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the holiness code for the Kohanim.
Yeah.
Before we begin to dive into the holiness code for the priests, we're going to go back to last week and revisit a couple of things as the instructions were given for the people. The holiness code for the people. Okay? Because last week is just like we're talking about a build up, that there's a build up because we're both. So we're going to continue walking out the instructions that He gave us and really beginning to learn what they mean because, well, part of what we're going to dive into tonight, but what I really want to activate tomorrow night at Bait is us taking a step back, kind of like outside of the instructions and looking in to be able to see how diluted or how separated we have become in our lifestyles in general from the the degree of holiness and the moral code, that holiness code that he has for us.
Yeah.
Because I think that sometimes when this is new, right? We've never been given his instructions before. And so there's been so much time and space. It's a lot to come back to. But first we have to wake up to the reality of our condition.
Yeah.
In order to fully embrace the condition that we're called to reside in.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that's part of why I want to go back through a little bit of last week. Elements of the holiness code that was released over us last week, whether we went through them line by line and gained detail or not, what was imparted over us was kind of like this big picture of how to retain and attain holiness. And all within this context of his jurisdiction needing to be expanded, right? That we are the ones who will help ensure that his jurisdiction, the authority that he operates from, out of who he is, his holiness, that it expands on earth. That's our responsibility, right? So we have to learn how to not just attain something, to grab a hold of something, but we also have to develop the integrity of character that can retain something.
Yeah.
That can hold on to something, not just in a moment, or not just through head knowledge, but to truly embody who he is.
Yeah.
That's a life's work, in that it's ever growing and we're ever maturing, but it's a life's work in that it's also not fleeting. Because if something's transformative, that means that you were something and then you become something else. That's the process that we're undergoing. This is the state that I'm in now. This is my condition, the condition of my mind, the condition of my heart, the condition of my spirit, and the condition of my body.
Yeah.
And the more I receive his instructions and that code of conduct that I'm to come under in my life, my mind, my heart, my spirit, and my body will begin to change, transform from the way that it is now, the way that it thinks and sees and hears and literally is. My being will transform into his. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we talk about things like honor, respect, respecting a mother and father, how to present an offering, stealing, lying, deceiving. I mean, those were just some of the instructions, some of the code that we were engaging last week as kind of a starting off point of where am I in my character or in my current state when it comes to these things. And so there's a lot that's just now beginning to open up for us because we've been living by our own code of ethics, morals, values that have been established through various cultures, whether it's rooted in paganism centuries ago, whether it's rooted in a movie I just watched, whether it's rooted in my classroom environment, the political ideologies I grew up with, whatever the family culture I had in my home, whatever it is that has shaped who we are, he is highlighting, identifying every time he says, this is what I have to say.
Yeah.
Right? So the first thing we have to do is allow him to expose the condition of your mind, your heart, your spirit, and your body so that it can be reconciled to his. And that is the work that we're submitting to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Which is how his jurisdiction will expand. And what we learned last week, it's also what will bring division. So we are being divided or separated from that condition, the literal condition I'm being found in when I confront his instructions.
Yeah.
So I'm being separated within myself, right? It's like he's taking a sword and he's dividing within me what is mine or what has been mine and what's his,
yeah.
Right? The way that I see it in myself is the things that have been ingrained in me or the things that I have operated in, my mindset, my behaviors, it's like they're so fine. I see it almost as like pieces of sugar or sand, where if you've ever had to separate those, or if you've ever spilled, like when you're baking and you spill sugar, everyone know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
All the bakers. When you spill sugar, it's like all of those granules, and it's like they're so fine, but I feel like he's just like sifting through these tiny little granules that have made up the fullness of who I am. And it can be in these tiny little finite pieces, and that's sometimes why we just overlook them, or we just become so used to them that we don't know any difference. And so anyways, that division is coming in us, but it's also happening then within the culture. It's happening in our businesses. It's happening in our personal lives. It's happening in our families. It's happening, you know, just any area of our life is being affected in the sense of division. If we're set apart, then there is division that's taking place, right? Another thing that was addressed last week, which is very, very important for us to carry into his instructions, is the benefit, the mindset of wanting to benefit without coming under, right? I don't want to be divided.
Yeah.
I don't want to come under something that feels like I'm being, I don't know, like ripped apart, or even we say we want to be set apart, but as you're literally being set apart, it doesn't necessarily feel, I mean, it feels like a lot of things, but when it's manifesting in certain ways, like in your classroom at school, or if it's in your workplace, or it's with your aunts and your uncles or your parents or whatever that looks like, those are the moments when I want the benefit, but I do not want to come under.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And that's the reality of what we have to walk out if we are to come under, because division will come. And division isn't, he's also going to kind of like redefine the way that word feels to us, because we're so used to walking in a manner of tolerance, which was also released on last week, to where we want there to just be peace, and we want there, or what we think peace is, right? Where there's no conflict, there's no confrontation, there's no misunderstandings, there's no I disagree, there's no disagreement, because we just won't address it. Or we won't make what he's separating known,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so those are the moments that then seem like coming under might not feel worth it.
Yeah, that's good.
But I still want the benefit, right? So those are things that we're having to sort through as the reality of action takes place.
Yeah.
Because before, in previous seasons, it was about claiming, even not just, I'm not just talking about in religion, but along our journey, it was about who do you say that we are?
Yeah.
That's what we were in pursuit of.
Yeah.
Our identity. Who do you say that I am?
Yeah.
And then once we knew, he said, okay, now that you know, you have to apply it.
Right.
So since the application, that's when division starts to happen. Right? That's when you can start to feel his jurisdiction within you longing to expand, but what it requires of us is stepping into those aspects of division, of dividing ourselves, of separating ourselves. Okay. What we ended with last week was this concept of homegrown versus state-sponsored idolatry. Mm-hmm. Right? So part of our purpose, as we're talking about coming under and the division that's taking place or his jurisdiction expanding, that those are all the responsibilities of his people, of his sons and his daughters, or those who say, I'm a follower, but also of the remnant bride, right? Because what the more we get our house in order, this house, my household, this house, then we will be able to, and also simultaneously as he teaches us how to govern things that he's always wanted to govern, but other things have stepped in, right? There are other things that are governing.
Yeah.
There are other things that have stepped into a place of false authority and oversight of holy things, things that were meant to be holy, and under this code that are now in opposition to it and are influencing households.
Yeah.
Right? And vice versa. The disorder or the disobedience in households allowed for there to be idolatry at a governmental level and beyond because we weren't governing. Right? So all of this, the holiness code that we're learning how to apply in ourselves and in our households, will also be what then brings that expansion of his jurisdiction and his authority into the earthly realm that he has asked for us to help oversee. Right? Okay. So that's a pretty big responsibility.
Yeah.
Right? It's
yeah.
like these little bits of, I need you to be responsible here, and I need you to be responsible for this, and I need you to own this, and I need you to own that, all the way to, this ultimately is what I'm raising you to govern. This ultimately is what I'm raising you to be responsible for.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So he's taking us from this like childlike state where we can understand governance to a certain degree or what our responsibility is, and then he's going to keep expanding it and expanding it and expanding it as we give him permission to increase his jurisdiction within us.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So all of that was last week as far as the holiness code for the people and why. Right? All right. So this week, we have the holiness code for the Kohanim. All right, so I'm going to do a couple different things tonight. I am going to go verse by verse. It's a shorter chapter, but there is a lot in it. So we're going to go verse by verse, kind of more just kind of practical, simple context. But then we are going to pull out these like big picture points of this chapter for us to receive more by the Spirit. Okay? So some of those just for us to be, I want to release those first. I'm not going to release them in full, but I do want to release what they are so that you can be making those connections as we go through verse by verse. Part of that is us learning how to receive the multiple intentions that he has even within his word, right? Because he gives direct instruction, which demands direct obedience, but it has layers of context for you to apply to your life. Okay, so that's how I'm looking at it, and that's how I want us to hear it. All right? Okay. So some of these big picture points for tonight, you can do however you organize your notes. You don't have to write them down right now necessarily. I will be going back through them once we get through the chapter, okay? But we're going to talk about proximity. We're going to further the system reboot. We're going to receive more life out of the death covenant. We're going to dive into what it means to serve Yahweh. And of course, his character is revealed. Okay? All right. Okay. All right. We're going to start with verses 1 through 6. Okay. Then Adonai said to Moses, "Speak to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, A Kohen is not to allow himself to become unclean for the dead among his people, except for his relatives that are nearest to him, his mother, his father, his son, his daughter, his brother, or his virgin sister who is near to him, who has had no husband. For her he may allow himself to become unclean, but he is not to defile himself, a husband among his people, and still profane himself. Kohanim are not to shave their heads, nor shave off the corners of their beards, nor make any cuttings in their flesh. They are to be holy to their God and not profane the name of their God, for they present the offerings of Adonai made by fire, the bread of their God. Therefore, they are to be holy." Okay. Part of why I read verses 1 through 6 together is because we're dealing again with death, right? So we are going to revisit why that's significant and why it is a significant mandate for the priests themselves. All right. But one thing for us to be aware of is I love part of what I have fallen in love with as he introduces the standard is the consistency in the standard that he calls us to and who he calls to the standard, because the priests are simply observing what they have already taught the community in recognizing the distinction between what is clean and what is unclean. Right?
Yes.
So in Leviticus 10, when we were in Leviticus earlier, Yahweh gives directives on the distinction between what is clean and what is unclean. So what do the priests do? They define what is clean and unclean, but they also submit their lives to the standard of what is clean and what is unclean.
Yeah.
So they're observing what they taught the community.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? A leader goes first.
Yes.
Okay. There's no double standard here. In fact, there's a greater standard.
Yep.
And we see that standard increase and increase because they're not exempt from the holy code of the people, but it's added to and a higher degree of standard is placed on them. And then you'll see that increase again when it comes to the high priest.
Yeah.
That it's not because of who you are exempt.
Yep. Yep.
But because of who you are, I also expect this of you.
Yeah.
That's an honor.
Maybe what was that word that you used? You said
the word.
They defined what's clean and unclean, and then they, you didn't say apply, you said a different word.
Observe.
Observe.
Mm.
Thank you.
Yeah. That the priests were observing what they taught the community. Yeah, which just means honoring. Yeah, activating. Okay. Some practical aspects. So when it's talking about how let me see what part. So they are allowed to become unclean. There is permission for them to become unclean, which you have to remember what it means for them to become unclean is that they will not be capable of service for a certain period of time that Yahweh directs them, which we'll find later in scripture. It's 7 days. But that time period, they cannot serve. So Yahweh has specific instruction as to what he would allow you to lay down your service in this way. Okay? He's not saying no, but he is saying within these guidelines, within these boundaries, this is what it would look like. Okay. All right, so death. We have visited this before. This is not the first time we have been given instructions when it comes to a dead body, when it comes to the way that we handle a dead body. It's not the first. But because it is new, I want to go back through a little bit of why it's so significant. Okay? So we have to acknowledge where death comes from. And it's opposition to who he is, to holiness, to righteousness, to wholeness, right? Death was not his design.
Yeah. Yeah.
So something that is unclean is related to a spiritual condition, right? And death is one of the repercussions of sin. It's the effect of sin. So anything that comes in contact, remember the instructions about when there's like something like residue on you, on your fabric or on your hands, anything that's come into contact with death in previous instructions that we've received, and then you're going to enter the tabernacle, the way in which you either cleanse yourself or you are forbidden to enter the temple until... Right? According to those directions. That is why. Because he cannot reside. He cannot dwell. Think about what the temple represented. That's where his people would come to dwell with his literal presence. This isn't worship music on, and I'm not saying that's devoid of his presence, but I mean his literal, tangible, his manifested presence is in that space. It's hard to imagine, and it's hard for us to work through our filter of, but I have access, which comes from so much separation and entitlement that it really, really is hard to, like, I understand in that system reboot that when Yahweh gives any sort of direction of what he can't be in the presence of, a couple of different things happen. But you're God. So why does it matter? Right? Like, you overcame death. Why does it matter if I bring death into a room where you reside? It's gonna take such a working out of the way that we have seen who he is in comparison to who we are.
Okay.
It has to do with recognizing our place and acknowledging the degree or the level of holiness that he embodies. That he simply won't tolerate anything that is not a reflection of who he is. And thank God. Right? Because a God who compromises on anything that's less than who he is one who will allow compromise in your life, which would lead to your death. So he cannot allow things that oppose him to be in his presence for your benefit as well. Does that make sense? Okay. Because I don't want us to stay in a place of using him, but I also want us to be able to also see that in all he does, it is on your behalf. But from a pure place. Not a place where I want it all and I don't want to come under, but a place of true humility that we recognize I'm man, your creator, and you want to be near me. So it's okay that you have requirements in order to be close. Right? Versus, because you're God, it shouldn't matter what I bring in your presence. No, because he's God, it matters what you bring into his presence.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we like stop some thoughts in their tracks?
Yep. Yeah.
And then work them backwards.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's good, Megan. That's really good.
Okay. So contact with the dead causes defilement. Okay? Because it's contact with something that isn't him. All right. A couple things about defiled versus unclean. They're kind of, you'll see that they're a little bit, they seem to be kind of interchangeable, where it'll use unclean, then it'll use defiled, then it'll use unclean. We're also going to get to where it starts saying profane and some different concepts. And I think that there's probably a lot to break down in those. I just have a couple thoughts on it tonight, okay? This is not fully encompassing. This is just some things that I feel like is beneficial for us to grab a hold of, especially in our system reboot. Okay, so the state of I get why mom does this. The state of being unclean, I'm like, uncleanliness. I'm going to box her after. I'm like, I get it, that's right. But the state of being unclean is a state of being. Okay, so unclean is a state of being. I am unclean. Okay, defilement, in different ways that it's expressed in this chapter, it's like the active process of something becoming impure.
Ooh, that's good.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, yes. That's kind of how I'm seeing it in this chapter. All right? Defiled versus unclean. Now, when it talks about, so we've already addressed why he is not to allow himself to be unclean for the dead among his people. Let me revisit one more thing before we move on into profane. Part of what Yahweh is going to work us out of is the way that we attach our human emotion to his character.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because I know when we read his instructions, that part of what will happen is our compassionate hearts that are human,
yes.
And that are bound in flesh will literally say, well, what if my best friend or my sister who's not a virgin or my, you know, or whatever, like whatever is not listed here, whatever is not approved by him, well, then we turn to character accusation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then we accuse, then we put labels on the way that he loves.
Yep.
Okay, first of all, you do not own or carry the definition of love outside of him. Your human understanding of love is wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong. It's flawed. It is filtered through by your own desire and self-preservation.
Okay?
The way that he loves is something that we will have to grow to understand. What compassion looks like is something we will continue to have to learn and grow in our understanding of. Okay? You have to remember that he is speaking to a people whose life is about serving him.
Yeah.
Okay? The issue is that our life is not about serving him. So our priorities,
yes.
And where our priorities come from is our humanity.
Yeah.
It's not divinity. So there are a lot of things that we can take offense in when he instructs us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the guidelines that he gives. But what about? And only this much time? And only he knows you. He knows how much time. If you were given all the time that you needed in any process in your life, would you finish it?
No.
Okay. Would you return to serving him? Okay. I wouldn't.
No.
It's okay. Like to say, meaning that if he didn't continuously father me, and if he didn't continuously give me boundaries and directions, I would be way off all on my own. And I would be really, 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 really good at justifying and excusing out of compassion, out of reason, out of logic, out of understanding, out of love, be able to justify all of my decisions.
Totally.
And be a good person.
Yep. Yeah. Come on.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it doesn't matter if you don't understand why it's become unclean for his mother and his father and his son and his daughter and his brother, but not so and so. It doesn't matter why we don't understand or why it's 7 days and then you return to service.
Yeah.
We don't have to fully understand. We have to come under. And ultimately, coming under is acknowledging, which we have gone over before, acknowledging you are God.
Yes.
You are sovereign. You are the king. You are the father. I am not.
Right.
Just like a parent is the parent, yes, and the child is the child.
Yes.
You don't get to question or challenge why.
Mm-hmm.
He sees more. He is. It doesn't matter.
Good.
Okay? All right. Okay, profane. All right, so moving into more along verse 4. But he is not to defile himself, a husband among his people, and so profane himself. Did anyone recognize or hear that word differently than you have before? Profane? I've always thought of profane as like profanity. At least personally, that's what I have. Yeah, like the way that we use it in the English language, the way that I grew up understanding it, you know, we don't use profanities.
Yeah.
I don't know that that word's even necessarily used in as much in the culture now, but I grew up with that word.
Sure.
You know, that our standard is we don't use profanities, we don't listen to things with profanity, we don't buy CDs that have profanity. You know, that was the context of the word. So I heard it as language.
Yeah.
Right? We don't use inappropriate language. Okay.
Yeah.
Did anyone else have parents like that?
Yeah.
Some people are like, no, I know everyone had different upbringings, but I just mean like the parental advisory stickers on CDs, you know. Anyways, my point is that was the context of my understanding. Okay, well, to profane himself or to profane means that you make something holy common. It's treating something sacred with disrespect and dishonor. Okay, so what would it look like to profane myself So there's a handful of ways that we can look at it. In this context, it says, and so profane himself. Make something holy common that comes through disobedience, right? Because I am meant to walk in holiness. And when I disobey or stay in a state of uncleanliness, then I make what is meant to be holy common. That's me. But then we also read about profaning his name. Right? Okay, now to profane his name then, what that means to me, my personal understanding and conviction in this week was that I'm representing him falsely. Because he is holy. And when I walk, if I am meant to be holy and I walk in disobedience or I stay in a state or a condition that he's trying to address and I remain there, then I'm making his name common. It's like all over in the word when it talks about glorifying his name. It gives a completely different understanding to what that means. Did anyone even know what it meant to glorify his name other than maybe to worship? Right? Because we had no context for the lifestyle that we were meant to live. So we're either glorifying and sanctifying his name, or we're profaning it. We're either representing him by our holiness or our pursuit for holiness, or we are making him common by literally becoming what he has called common. By engaging in a culture that's not his. By eating things that he says aren't food. Those are all of the different examples that he has where he has made certain things holy and we're engaging in the common. But proclaiming his name, which really then means we're profaning his name. Okay. Another aspect of verse 4, a husband among his people. Just a picture of the priest and his role in the community, but thinking of that within the context of the high priest, of Yeshua, being a bridegroom.
Yeah.
That, again, part of what's being emphasized after he goes through the instructions of this will make you unclean, this is who you can come into contact with when they die outside, and this is the time frame, because he is a husband among his people. So when he gives you an instruction, remember that you're receiving that instruction because you are the husband and the bride. Right? Meaning he's the bridegroom, you're the bride, but you also are the one who is as a husband to his people. Okay. Right? Are you supposed to walk as Yeshua walked?
Right.
Okay. All right. We also read through verse 6. Verse 5, I don't feel like I really need to go back through that. Not to shave their beards, shave off the corners of their beards or cuttings in their flesh. Mom and dad have taught on that a lot. Again, it's all about separation, being set apart, not to look like pagan cultures or in how we honor the dead, which we understand the significance of death. So is he going to have some things to say or some guidelines about what it looks like to mourn, what it looks like to grieve, how to do that in a way that is holy, because it's not just about death, but it's about life, right? That if he's more concerned with life than death, then he's going to have some guidelines on what it looks like to recognize, acknowledge death. Okay, so set apart when it comes to, you know, the priests and the way that they were to physically respond. All right, so verse 6, they are to be holy to their God and not profane the name of their God. We talked about what profane means. Because they are the ones who present the offerings of Adonai made by fire, the bread of their God. Therefore, they are to be holy. All right. So, well, I already talked about that. I think I might want to wait to speak on that, actually. Because that is the verse that I'm taking and wanting to release over us when it comes to proximity. Okay, and the level of responsibility, the closer we are, right? Okay, so we're going to kind of wait to address that. But practically, obviously, there are different standards because they are the ones who are also preparing the offerings on behalf of the people and presenting something to him. And so the standards are different, okay? All right, so he's saying why. He's not just giving instruction, but he's saying why, which is pretty powerful as a father to say, this is how I'm calling you to operate. The reason for this is because I need you to be holy.
Yeah.
It's your responsibility to present the offerings, so you are to be holy. All right. One more thing practically, kind of along the same lines of kind of like the beard and all of the cutting and stuff, the mourning, but also in the preparation of bodies. So I know everyone grew up in different faith cultures and backgrounds, and as far as what it looks like for who would oversee something like even the preparation of a dead body or a funeral, those kinds of things. And this is speaking to also the priests not preparing the dead bodies, because religious leaders in other religious systems or pagan cultures, there were things that they would do not just to themselves, but in the touching of the bodies, that again, it's also about Yahweh making separate distinctions, because you're not just set apart for yourself, but you are set apart so that you can be identifiable. So he doesn't want your identity to be confused. In general, I mean, that's a word when it comes to why priests were instructed in a specific way to respond to death, but also in how they literally handled death of even others in their community, right? Doesn't that sound kind of like, well, anyway, there's a lot when it comes to like, but tolerance, compassion, you know. Okay. Anyways. Okay, so then verses 7 through 9, we move into marriage practices. All right. They are not to marry women who are defiled as prostitutes or profane. Neither shall they marry women divorced from their husbands, for a Kohen is holy to his God. Therefore you are to sanctify him, because he offers the bread of your God. There's the reason again. He shall be holy to you, for I, Adonai, who sanctifies you, am holy. The daughter of any Kohen, if she profanes herself by playing the prostitute, profanes her father. She is to be burned with fire. Okay. All right. It is. And again, compassion, hold on. We're talking about the standard of earthly covenant. And we were just talking about how when it comes to walking in holiness, but also what it means to be set apart means you are identifiably different. Okay? And the priest has to walk in holiness, and this is in every area of his life. This has to do with mingling. This has to do with compromise. Okay? A lot of times what we will see as in our humanity, what we will see as a lack of something is actually our pushback of a standard. Meaning, like, it's easier to have compassion and call it compassion when it really just makes room for compromise.
Ooh, that's good stuff right there.
That's good.
And I feel like I can say that. Because I've walked out a process of what it means to move from compassion to standard first. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Which is not a lack of or in place of, but it's final. Meaning there cannot, I do not know how to untwist our mindsets. You can't excuse compromise for tolerance. You can't excuse compromise for compassion. You can't excuse compromise for love. His holiness and a standard, it's not flexible. In our nature, it is, so we don't understand why it's not.
Right.
But that's because we compromise. So it's like we try to bring him down into our level of understanding, but also the way that we live our lives, because that's what makes sense to us. And so then when it doesn't make sense to us, we just say it's mean.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the priest has to commit every area of his life to what Yahweh says is holy. So Yahweh is addressing what it looks like for every area of his life to meet this standard, including who he engages in covenant with on earth. All right, and we learned what sexual purity represents, right? Or sexual impurity represents. What did Mom say? that it puts you in a demonic realm. Okay? So when he has a standard and says, this is who you can marry and this is who you cannot, this is the one who is bringing the offering on behalf of the people and who is directly, like, he is the closest in proximity to his physical presence.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. So there are things he cannot engage with. Okay. Also, when it comes to prostitution, we've learned a little bit about this. What was prostitution connected to as well? Not always. Idolatry. Okay? Things that cannot stand in his presence. All right? Prostitution in idol worship. Okay. So, same standard for the priest, same standard for his household. Makes me think of when Moshe was getting ready to be sent, and Yahweh said, hold on, get your house in order. Mm-hmm. Right? So the daughter has this standard because her father is a priest. Okay. All right, then when we move into verse 10, we're shifting gears a little bit, and it's talking about the high priest. Okay, he who is the Kohen Gadol among his brother, upon whose head the anointing oil is poured and is consecrated to put on the garments, is not to let the hair of his head hang loose or tear his clothes, nor shall he go near any dead person, defiling himself, even for his father or his mother. He is not to go out of the sanctuary or profane the sanctuary of his God. Profane, make something holy, common. For the crown of the anointing oil of God is upon him. I am Adonai. Okay, so again, we hear even higher standards. So where the priests could, how does it say him, could become unclean for some of the dead among the people, the high priest could not. It did not matter what relation he had. It did not matter how close he was, the context of his relationship, he could not defile himself in that manner. He had to be completely, completely clean. Who is the high priest? Yes. The ultimate standard. Absolute fullness. No compromise, no mingling. Absolute purity and closest proximity. Upon whose head the anointing oil is poured. The crown of the anointing oil of his God is upon him. There continues to be more standards. He shall take a wife in her virginity, a widow or one divorced, or one who has been defiled as a prostitute. He is not to marry. He is to take a virgin from his own people as a wife, so as not to corrupt his offspring among his people, for I am Adonai who sanctifies him. What I think is significant about how Yahweh keeps saying, I am the one who sanctifies, to me, it speaks to compromise. Mm. At least in this season of life. In our next season, I'm sure it will speak to something else. But in this season, when I hear him say, for I am the one who sanctifies, part of what I hear is not you. Meaning, I'm giving you a direction. You are not the one who gets to sanctify decisions or make something holy that is common and say it's holy.
That's good.
You do not have that authority.
That's it. That's good.
Maybe one day you will. When he asks you to rule and reign with him. But at this point in our lives, we do not have the authority to call something clean that is unclean.
Yeah.
Or to say something is holy that he says is not.
That's good.
So it's like no exceptions when he says that. These are my instructions. There are no exceptions.
That's good.
Okay. Okay. This one, we're going to stay on a little while. We're going to get to physical defects. Okay. All right. Verses 16 through 24. Adonai spoke to Moshe, saying, "Say to Aaron, none of your offspring throughout their generations who has a defect may approach to offer the food of his God. Any man who has a defect is not to draw near. No one blind or lame or disfigured or deformed, or a man who has a crippled foot or crippled hand, or a hunchback or dwarf, or who has an eye defect or a rash or scabs, or who has damaged testicles. None of the offspring of Aaron the Kohen who has a defect shall come near to present the offerings of Adonai made by fire. Since he has a defect, he is not to come near to offer the food of his God. He may eat the food of his God, both from the most holy and the holy. But he is not to approach the curtain or come near the altar because of the defect on him, so that he may not desecrate my sanctuaries, for I am Adonai who sanctifies them." Okay. Was this anyone's first time really reading that aspect of scripture?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. What were your initial thoughts?
Oh, God.
That's not fair.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
That way.
Okay, he was created that way.
These are good.
Yeah, like kind of like the idea of like, well, you're just born like that. It's not your fault.
It's outside of their control.
Confession.
Yeah. Like a what?
Confession.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Any other ones? Okay.
Those
are really good.
I was like, probably a good thing because you don't have a whole bunch of short people running everything because they might put people over the chip.
So it's all practical. They might not literally be able to do their duties.
Like, could you imagine a blind person having to
sure.
like, kill your bowl? Like,
yeah.
Just like miss and
no,
look at you?
That's
yeah.
That's
I hear what you're saying, the practical side of being of serving him, you know, in
yeah.
your fullness. Okay, those are really, really good. I really appreciate everyone sharing. Because this is part of the system reboot.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's part of a worldly system reboot.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of a religious reboot. I don't know what else. There's a lot. Cultural reboot, okay? Culture of tolerance reboot. All right. First, I just want to defend Yahweh in one specific regard. Is he saying that they are of no value?
No.
Is he saying that they may not eat?
No.
Okay. Is he saying that they not may not receive of him?
No.
Okay. All right. We're talking about the tabernacle where he dwells. Okay. His presence, we've got holiness and perfection. Fullness. Okay. Sickness, physical ailments, deformities, what are those a reflection of? Death. Sin. Right? Okay. Was there meant to be sickness? Okay. Were our bodies meant to be broken? Were our bodies created not full? Okay, that one took a little more time to respond to.
Yeah.
Part of that is because part of what we've told ourselves is everything. Oh my gosh, you guys.
Everything is good. Yeah.
Like, am I allowed to say all of that?
You have permission. Yeah. Do it.
Everything happens for a reason.
Oh, that's a good one. Let's get it that one.
Okay.
Dang it.
I'm not saying that he can't do everything with anything.
That's good.
That's not what I'm saying. But can we recognize that in sin and in separation, we are not whole?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, if these are reflections of a sinful, broken world that opposes his nature and his very being, can he dwell or reside with it?
No.
No. It's no different than the idolatry. It's no different than the sexual immorality and impurity. Yet, it evokes a completely different response from us than those do.
Yeah.
That's religion.
Oh. Yeah, say it again.
Oh! Okay. Someone, oh my gosh. Like, shut them down. Someone with a physical deformity, someone with a defect, is not any different in the sense of that they are not full or walking in, that they are not full like idolatry or those other things that he says I can't dwell with, but specifically in the sense of what the tabernacle represents. Okay, so the priest himself is a symbol. He's a servant, but he's also a symbol. He represents wholeness and the coming. Not only does he represent wholeness, but he's responsible for bringing, for literally reconciling your brokenness to his wholeness. Okay? So he also represents the coming high priest or the coming priest who is without any imperfection. He is the only flesh that is completely whole. Every other, the rest of us are broken. Whether it's here, 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 in all of those ways, whatever that means, it's not full. It did happen for a reason. But not because he was like, yeah, some of you can just be, some of you can just be this. Some of you can just be that. It's the effect of sin. It's not his intention, and he doesn't want to tolerate it. So just as a sacrifice cannot have blemish, which we find no fault in.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, what about the poor sheep that just wants to serve its purpose, but it's like got a limp leg?
Ooh.
Right?
Stinking compassion.
I know. Okay, so just as a sacrifice must be without blemish, that the one offering up the sacrifice, also these standards are because the one that offers up the sacrifice also cannot be blemished to the capacity of his flesh, meaning he's still imperfect because he's man. But these standards at least cause him to operate more like Yahweh and represent him more fully than to be without them. That includes physical ailments. Because that's not his, it's not the fullness of his representation. It represents other things that have separated us from him. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So, another perspective to bring is were individuals with defects, were they the only ones who couldn't approach him? No. This is a priesthood. This is a family among the entire Israelite community, a bloodline or a genealogy that were called into the priesthood. Yet somehow we will find fault in Yahweh out of our own literal separation when it comes to tolerance. Don't grab that word in like the culture in the sense of if I'm saying he doesn't tolerate that, then I'm saying he doesn't love, he doesn't value, he didn't create. It's not what I'm saying. So, we have this tendency, though, to hear things like this and then accuse his character when another aspect is that all other Israelites were prohibited from priestly service. Okay, so you're hearing like who the standards of those who are called to priestly service, but it's not like, well, that's discrimination. Right? But it's discrimination if someone has a defect, but it's not discrimination, or if somebody had a divorce, or if somebody, right? I mean, we could be offended all day long. Yeah. But again, this is the holiness code for the priesthood, and all the rest of the nation is prohibited from his presence in this way and from this type of service. Were they less valuable?
No.
Come on. Were they less valuable?
No.
What are the priests doing on their behalf? Are they less valuable? While we accuse and we pick apart his standards, and all of it is for you. Even the literal standard of who may serve, because I want to make sure that they represent the fullness that I have for you. And we say, that's offensive, you're hateful, you're unloving, we see prejudice.
That's good stuff.
Okay. Couple more things with this one. There is continuity of scripture here when I know that part of what we will think is, but Yeshua. Right? Yeshua would. He would touch them. And he would, you know, well, this is how he interacted with those people. And Yahweh's like, don't come into my presence. Okay. Yeshua, in healing the sick, is acknowledging their imperfection. Yahweh is doing no different.
Yes.
He's acknowledging imperfection and he is creating a means for restoration.
Yes.
It is absolutely no different.
Yeah.
That one gets me fired up. Is it offensive or unloving to call out imperfection so it can be healed?
Shoot.
Or.
That's good. That's crazy. That's
good. Or is it unloving to allow imperfection to remain so that you can feel good?
Yes.
This mindset of you're perfect just as you are. You are whole just as you are. You are not. And the only way that that can be restored is if you acknowledge that you're not. So just as a priest would, Yeshua acknowledges imperfection and brings restoration. He restores them to the state that Yahweh says, that is the only state I will accept. I will not accept you any less than whole. I will not accept you in any state less than whole. But where does he meet you? In the condition that you're in. Acknowledging the imperfection, acknowledging the separation, acknowledging the effect of sin, and then creating a means to restore and heal. No different than what Yahweh did. If we refuse to acknowledge what's broken, we'll never receive restoration. That includes in other people. Not just you. So when you appease someone, right?
Yeah.
And there's a way, and there's relationship, and there's, you know, there's just as he does, where he meets us where we are, in love and in grace, but also with an introduction to the standard of wholeness. That is also how we operate with others.
Yes.
Does it change the way you hear, but he is not to approach the curtain or come near the altar because of the defect on him, so that he may not desecrate my sanctuaries? For I am Adonai who sanctifies them. Does it change a little bit?
Yeah.
May you hear it?
Yeah.
I am Adonai who sanctifies them. So he still will sanctify. But there's a way.
Yes.
And there's order and there's purpose to that order and to those standards. All right. Is everyone doing okay with the line by line?
That was really good. Question.
Yeah.
Do you think if somebody was blind or lame and then got healed from it, they could move into priesthood? Or is it like if that's in your bloodline, like it's a place right there?
I don't know. I mean, I only know what it literally says, and it's someone with a deformity. So if they don't, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't say bloodline, but I don't know. Yeah. We'd have to look in scripture to see if there are any examples of that too.
Mm-hmm.
like later when there's healing and what they're sent into. I mean, they're sent into lives of like ministry in a sense, you know, like to turn and follow. Not that that's literally like keeping the temple, but you know what I mean? So, okay. All right, so we're okay as far as the line by line? Yeah? Okay. All right, so now we're going to get to some, like, big picture. Okay. All right. One of the connections that we have to make is proximity. There are different standards for the priest than there are for the people because of their proximity to him.
Yes.
They are the ones who will approach the altar. They are the ones who will present the offerings. Part of what this means for you is that the closer you become to him, the further you have to become from other things. Right? The closer you draw to him, the further you have to distance yourself from other things. And what's beautiful is it works both ways. The further you distance yourself from other things, the closer you can draw to him. And the closer you draw to him, the further you have to distance yourself from other things. That's where we are. That's the process of being set apart.
Yep.
That's the literal activation of being a follower. It also is in opposition to the mindset that was released last week about wanting the benefit but not wanting to come under. Right? If you want to get close, which again, system reboot, you want to get close, you got to distance yourself from some things. Okay?
Yes.
It's not, I can do whatever I want and you have to be available for me.
Yeah.
No, he does not. Okay. There's a lot of furthering the system reboot. And one of those is that I feel like I could tangibly like hear as I was studying this portion the mindset in Christianity of this really had to do with the times.
Yeah.
Like even our awakened state, you know, in the modern culture, like how awakened we are to things like people with deformities or, you know, that this, the context of this though was just a different time. We don't think that way anymore. Thank God. We don't see that way anymore. Whew, we've evolved. This is barbaric. This is dehumanizing. Right?
Yeah.
Social work department.
Okay.
I went through it too. What the Code of Holiness is about, and in this aspect of Scripture, this portion of Scripture, when we're talking so much about sin and death and separation, it's about the mixing of life and death that's taking place. So when we say it had to do with the times, what that means is we're so far removed from walking in holiness that we tolerate everything else. We have come so far under pagan culture. Talk about coming under.
Yeah.
What have you come under?
Yeah.
Come on. We have come so under pagan culture that syncretism and tolerance are absolutely deemed normal.
Yeah.
And the standards that he has are offensive and prejudiced. I don't remember what I said. Tolerance. Don't confuse the word tolerance with what it really means. I can feel people sorting through that. Okay. Yahweh is not saying to be prejudiced. He is the opposite of that. But what we understand prejudice to be is completely different. Does that make sense? So his standards can be considered offensive, or even prejudiced, or sexist, or whatever, you know, whatever we think. When the reality is that we've come so much under another culture, his standards, we cling to paganism. Okay. All right, that's a big system reboot. Can you feel it?
Yes.
Okay. Standards are oppressive. Right?
Oh my God.
I mean, well, I won't get into all that. Just going to say, as a woman, no. Tell you a little bit about feminism. But I won't tonight.
When you feel like talking.
Okay, we'll have a girl. All right, anyway. Okay. Another big picture. We are, in this Torah portion, we are gaining more and more access to life. Because what he continues to speak to is do not mix with death. By the very nature of not having access to his instructions, we've mixed with death. Okay, because his instructions teach you how to live. Yahweh does not want your life to be lorded over. Okay, when I say life, your everyday life, which is your worship and your service to him, that is what your life is for.
Yes.
Okay? He does not want your life, which is your worship and your service to him, to be lorded over by death. His holiness code or his instructions, they produce and preserve life. What's crazy to me, as Yahweh continues to expose the death covenant that we've been so attached to, is that even in salvation, or that false salvation gospel, we were still slaves to death.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because if salvation is all that we need, and then in order to receive fullness, we have to wait to die, you are still a slave to death. It does not bring you life to live. You are still bound to death.
Yeah.
I cannot receive from you until I die. Covenant. Literally, in receiving salvation, you are then bound to a death covenant. I have never seen that or felt that more clearly than when I was, for whatever reason, here. I guess it took me like the 18th time for him to address death, for me to recognize that immediate bonding that takes place.
Yeah.
Okay. So the emphasis then is on life, right? Okay. So when we're wrestling through all of these instructions on death, it takes a system reboot because we have to shift our focus to living. All right. Another big picture. This is 4 out of 5, so we're almost done. Just an understanding of service to Yahweh. Different things throughout this chapter as far as our service to Yahweh. He is not to defile himself, a husband among his people. They are to be holy to their God and not profane the name of their God, for they present the offerings of Adonai made by fire, the bread of their God. Therefore, they are to be holy. Therefore, you are to sanctify him because he offers the bread. He cannot profane the sanctuary, for the crown of the anointing oil is on him. Okay, all speaking to service, right? All right. So, providing the provisions of God's house and table. I want you guys to receive that purpose over your lives in the spirit. You are to provide the provisions of God's house and his table, which means you are not to stain or pollute yourself of anything that would keep you from being able to serve him. Another way to look at these instructions is there are ways that I live my life and decisions I make that will keep me from being able to provide the provisions of his house. I also hear something that's somewhat offensive, which is you cannot allow circumstance to redirect you. He says, go mourn. I give you 7 days. It's so insensitive. He will not allow circumstance to redirect you.
That's good. That's really good.
Part of what happens when we are redirected, what actually redirects you? Is it circumstance or is it you? Circumstance can direct you. It doesn't have to redirect you. Right? That's based on your response. How we respond to a circumstance, first of all, he's saying, I have guidelines and standards for how you respond to something. Which is new. Right? And we're only just now beginning to receive what they are. There's going to be more. But he's directing how we respond to things like periods, menstruation. He's directing how we respond to things like birth. He's directing how we respond to things like death, so that we aren't redirected from service. Because so much of ourselves does not want the responsibility of serving.
That's good. That's good. Come on. Yeah.
I don't always want to provide the provisions of his house.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I do not always want to provide the provisions of his house. I'm selfish. I wanna live my life. I wanna live my life my way. I wanna travel. I wanna do this, I wanna do that. I do not want my time to be spent providing the provisions of his house and his table.
That's good.
That's not the true nature of my heart, but it's the nature of my flesh.
Yeah.
And it's constant.
Yeah.
So it's easy when circumstance comes to allow it to redirect me and say, you do not have to concern yourself with providing the provisions of his house. You are justified. You've had a hard day. You've had a hard week. You've had a hard season. You have so many other responsibilities. You're tired. You're hurt. You're offended. You're irritated. You're genuinely not well, physically or other. So it's very easy for us to be redirected inwardly, meaning literally to redirect our focus on serving and providing those provisions, to redirecting that provision to me. No, I need you to provide. No, I need you to provide. No, I need you to provide. Can we do that? Yeah. And there's always a reason. And it's always justifiable. Which is why he gives us boundaries and guidelines. That's like my favorite thing about him, I think. One of them is how often he saves me from myself. I'm like, man, I don't even know where I would be if I just did whatever I wanted. So don't fight. His instruction. Anyways, service to Yahweh. Okay? All right. We received a lot of his character in this chapter. Ultimately, what I want to keep emphasizing is his longing to dwell And that every instruction that he gives is for this sake. Right? So even when we don't understand, or it sounds or feels oppressive, or offensive, or even prejudiced in our understanding of the word, or whatever it may be that you're having to wrestle out, that it all, every instruction is because he longs to dwell with you. But our character, your character, it has to conform to his image. Right?
Yep.
So he longs to dwell with you as your character and image conforms to his. So the heart would be, again, a reminder for us that I feel like we hear over and over again through his word as he is revealing his character. He is willing. Would anyone at this point, if you do, let's talk after, feel like he is absolutely not willing? Meaning, has he proven himself by us beginning to understand his instruction that in every way he is willing to provide a means for you to dwell and not be separated? I don't think we can argue that anymore. I don't think we can accuse him anymore that he's simply not willing. Right? Okay, and instead, the responsibility has shifted, and the question remains, are we?
That's super good. Holy moly. Thank you, Megan, for all of that. That was a lot. That was so good. I agree 100% that there was a lot of Yahweh's character released tonight. So good, because religion defines his character and has been for my whole life. And so to hear something like tonight, it redefines my definition of his character and who he is and what he believes and what he stands on. And then I'm confronted with truth, and it is confronting. But because I trust and I submit, and I know that what our family walks through is new and different and not agreeable, it is easier for me to swallow, even though the wrestling is still pertinent to the growth. Obviously, Amber's the one that usually does this part, so she's usually all like good with it. I've never done it, so I'm going to try my best to roll through it. As someone who is actively learning to walk out compartmentalization, I feel like every day there's like a new thing that I'm like realizing that there's a compartmentalized part of my life. And I think, obviously, Amber and Jason having a baby is a super huge blessing to our family, to their family, to the world. Selfishly, it's a blessing to me because it's an opportunity for me to confront more compartmentalization. In a good way, I'm not fighting it because I know it's there. So because I know it's there, I don't have to fight it. I just have to deal with it as it comes up. So I've never had to like listen to a word in the context of finances. And so tonight was really fun because I'm listening to Megan all night, and I was really, I honestly had a little panicking moment right as we were starting, because I was like, Religion was like stepping in, like really hardcore. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not prepared. I don't know what the heck I'm supposed to say. I don't know how to connect these dots. I don't know how to like make this outside of what I've known in the context of me talking about tithes and offerings and first fruits and trading and stuff. But Ellen sent me a text during the beginning, and it really like helped me like snap out of it. She would just give me an idea like, hey, this is something you can talk about. And I was like, how is this? It was literally compartmentalization in the moment right as we were starting. And she's like, I was like, how is this relevant? She was like, you know, blah, 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 blah. And in that moment, it was like, oh, that's how I apply the word to offering and tithes and money. And so it like broke a wall of compartmentalization. And so not only was I listening to what Megan is releasing tonight through the lens of like, how does this apply to my life, but also how does this apply to finances? And so I had quite a bit of like really, really fun stuff from tonight, and it'll all be a reverberation of her. So it's not, if it sounds amazing, it's because it's from her. And not me, I just put the word finances in it.
I do that all the time with mom and dad. I'm like, you just said this. I'm going to repeat it for quick.
Yes. And so, but it is like, when we talk about system reboots, like listening to this in the context of finances, it's a huge system reboot for me, because I think we all compartmentalize our finances. We don't apply the word to our finances because it's just our finances. It's not, you know, it's just our money, and we pay our bills and we buy our food and we go out to eat and we are under a budget or we struggle with a budget or we're broke or we have savings, whatever. Whatever. And but the reality is there's a system reboot in me just thinking through the word, even just tonight, because I have to come underneath everything she's talking about. I can't have the benefit and the blessing of him without coming underneath him. So I had to confront the idea, are my finances coming underneath him in the way that I think they should, in the way I think he expects them of me. If we are called to be priests, then we are also called to be priests like over our finances, which is not something I've thought about because I've compartmentalized it. So when she's talking about, you know, priests submit to what is clean and unclean, I'm thinking, so is my spending clean or unclean? You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh shoot, like, think about that. I never put it in the context of money as clean or unclean. I mean, you hear it in religion, but you don't hear it in the context and the culture of our family. Is my spending of my money clean or unclean? And is my finances, have they come underneath him in the context of our culture and what we're realizing walking out the Torah? Mm-hmm. She said unclean state versus defilement state. And so then again, I'm confronted, are my finances in a state of just being unclean, or am I consistently defiling my finances? Am I in the active process right now of defiling my finances? Like, is it literally happening? What did I buy today? Did I pay my tithes? Like, what's going on with giving? Yeah. Am I struggling with giving? Am I sowing? Am I doing trading? Like, what is my spending, clean or unclean? And I'm not saying this from like legalism or religion or anything like that. I'm just speaking from my heart of what I was confronted through the lens of this, and breaking down the walls of compartmentalization and applying the word across the board, even into finances. I mean, you can apply it to anything, parenting, marriage, like any subject across the board. Apply tonight instead of putting, you know, are my blank clean or unclean? Put that there. Is my blank, you know what I'm saying? And so it works. And I find that my compartmentalizes the word. and it doesn't flow through things in my life. So there's a couple of questions that came up from things that Megan was saying. Am I way off on my own with my finances? Are my finances holy or common? Which that was a big one, because I'm thinking like, but my money is common. Like, there's nothing special about it. Am I profaning my finances and making something holy common? Do my finances represent him well?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Like, that was a good one. If the world were to come into our building and say, pick you out from the crowd, let's look at your finances and your spending and your checks and balances, do your finances represent Yahweh well?
Mm-hmm.
Like a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's not fair. Which led into the next question. Am I excusing compromise in my finances? Which that one was stupid too. I didn't like that. If my finances are broken and I refuse to see it because of compromise, they can't be restored. Again, this is something she just said in a different context, but if we apply it in our finances, that is just, if I'm refusing to look at the state of my finances, then they can't be restored.
Mm-hmm.
Where money is always hard. Oh, I'm always broke, living from paycheck to paycheck. Or why can't I just get this? Why can't I just buy this? Why do we just not have enough money? Why don't we have enough? Like, we look at this guy, we look at that guy. They have this, they have that, they have everything. Why can't mine, blah, blah, blah. Why does mine look like this? Why do people have these houses and I can't freaking buy my own house? Like, got a bunch of money, but I can't make it work. So it's like, I that was a tough one. If my finances are broken and I don't look at the state of it, and they're not submitted and haven't come underneath him, and I don't look at it as a clean and uncleaning spending, and I am pouring my money into something else, like, then are my finances underneath him? He doesn't want our finances lorded over by death. That was a good one. That was one that just was said a minute ago. This was a really cool one too. My finances are his provisions for my life. And he won't allow circumstances to redirect me from what he said to do with my finances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Circumstances and finances don't, they don't really plague around.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always a circumstance
yep.
as to why we didn't do what
yes.
we were supposed to do with our finances.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That was a tough one, because there's always a valid circumstance
yes.
regarding our money.
Yes.
Always.
Yes.
And it's very valid.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was like, I don't like that one either. I am valid, and my circumstances situation is what it is.
Yeah, that's real.
That's real.
Yeah.
But is it? Like,
yeah.
Does that mean I still get, then,
justifiable.
I, then okay. Is it justifiable?
Mm-hmm.
Am I off then? Do I not have to uphold the standard? Or, you know, obviously, I don't even know what the standard is because I didn't ever think about it this way in the
mm-hmm.
context because of compartmentalization.
Yeah.
This one was really cool. This is the last thing I'm going to say. Our finances, my finances, this is what she just said, provide the provisions of this house. Which was cool. I was like, oh.
Literally.
Yep. We've always heard that in the context of religion, you know, but in this context, it hits differently.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
That's all I have. I don't have anything else. I don't have a.
That's all.
I don't have like a big revelation of anything else other than what she just said, and I put it in that bowl. And mixed it around.
That's good.
What came out in like, so.
Yeah.
as we are closing tonight and shifting, I just wanted to like re-say a couple things that she spoke to tonight as a way of that settling in our heart as we are sitting with this word and sitting in the revelation that came tonight. Megan, we just really appreciate your voice and appreciate you, especially when you're like, you didn't say it like this, but when you're like, if anyone can speak on compassion, it's me. And how you didn't say it like that, and I know, but I'm just in Ellen's words, like that's how I'm hearing it, and that's true. To allow him to even touch my human definition of compassion and my human filter, and that it's more about humanity and not divinity, that was like, kink, kink. That was just really good. We appreciate you taking on this portion and being such a voice for mom and dad, and being such a daughter that has fully, like, multiplied, has allowed the multiplication of DNA that you, like, when you're talking about the standard for those leading being different, we acknowledge that that standard is multiplied in you. And we are grateful that you would be that, like, intermediary to be able to bring us the word and bring us the what he's speaking to, like, to break it down. That everything, that even you're such a representation of this word, of like that when you're talking about the priests, that they're doing it for the people, and you're the how much you have devoted for us, because you want us close, right? So, like, because she, mom and dad, of course, Amber and Jason, because they want us close. That's why we're always, sorry, my brain just like went, but we, that like, that heart, not only wanting us close to him for us, but so that we can do the same for others. Right? To be able to be that bridge. And so we just are super thankful for your voice. And I just wanted to pull us back to a couple things that she said as we're like really meditating on this and letting the word have its like perfect work in us. That if we are like going back to the beginning of when she first started talking, which went back to last week, about how we've been living by our own code. And we have no idea how far off that code is, because today I would have thought, like, it's a relatively, I mean, other than the, like, deformities, it's a relatively straightforward, like, yeah, we know, like, we shouldn't have prostitutes in our, like, in our intimate family. Like, that's kind of obvious. But, if I align, like, I don't even know how far off my definition of love is or compassion, and I'm just living for humanity and I'm not living for divinity. It was like I felt like all of a sudden I saw like the Grand Canyon of my morality and his righteousness. Yes. So if we're that we've been living by my own code. Okay, I see that. Like, I'm attesting to that for sure. And if we are to be the ones that are providing the provision for his house, as because we're followers of the way, going back to like, this is literally the activation of being a follower of the way, right? Following is doing. So I just wanted to really leave us with the activating in acknowledging the separation, when she was speaking to about the defect, and when she said, is it allowed to call out an imperfection, or is it not allowed to call out an imperfection so you can feel good? Like, we are a people that are so hungry to be near to Him and set apart. You wouldn't be here if that wasn't who you are. So let's be a people. You already are. I'm just calling out who you are. That we are a people that not only wants to acknowledge where the separation, the gap, the defect, the whatever it is, fill in the gap. We not only are so wanting to acknowledge it, we are looking for it. You're looking for it in yourself and in your household. Not like when she was speaking to this is that that's how we operate with others. Talk about like my dysfunctional concept of compassion of like, oh, it's fine. You're fine. How often I say that when it's, if we are a people that's holy, I literally could feel the like fire of his holiness as she was releasing tonight about that singe of, if I want to get close to that, which I do and you do, then I have to be holy, which means I have to look for it. It's not a, like, I think I did good with this Torah portion. Like, I think I did okay.
Yeah.
I'm not a prostitute, so we're good.
Yeah.
Like, right, am I?
Meaning
am I giving?
Standards.
Yes.
What does prostitution mean?
Yes. Am I serving myself? Are my opinions or my what I want more important than what he does? Am I wanting my life more than I'm wanting his? Or more than I'm wanting to serve him? That is idolatry. That is giving myself away so that I can have the benefit.
Yeah.
We have to look for it. The grains of sand.
Yeah.
Be hungry to search it out. Be
yeah.
active in and diligent in searching for the truth inside and around you.
Mm-hmm.
And be willing not only to call it out, but be willing to hear it. Of like, okay, I see that. I see that in your marriage with your kid. Like, okay, I see what you're saying. Like put it away. Put your stuff away and hear what they're saying. Right? Hear what he's saying. Because if we are not wanting, if we can't acknowledge, then we're never going to be restored. So we're never going to be holy. So we're never going to be in his temple. And I want to be in his temple.
Yeah.
And you do too.
Yeah.
That is the whole purpose. We want to follow him. We're literally wanting to follow Yeshua all the way to the Holy of Holies. All the way in. And there is a lot of work before we can go there. But that's like, we're doing it, right? So do it when you go home. On the drive, like immediately activate in doing the work to see it and look for it.
Yeah.
And that's like part of that growing, right? In sustaining and growing in our ability to apply. Which you all are working on very hard.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.